Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome to a Memorial Day, currently a Memorial Day weekend podcast edition episode. Of course, you know, be up after the Memorial Day weekend, but we're doing this a little bit early. But anyway, I am Will Chase, joined today by Dale Bloom. What the hell was up? Making his second appearance on the Canon Cast. What's up?
Looking for some barbecues tomorrow, so... If anybody, actually, this will be up after the weekend, and you guys are in Columbus, and I'm not, so I might be a little bit screwed in that aspect, but
I'm not either.
Good to be here.
I'm in Virginia, so we're all over the place. Yeah, what's up, Seeds? What the hell is up? It's the Indy 500 currently, or it's about to be. What's up?
Yeah, about, we're recording this about 40 laps into the Indy 500.
It is going on, okay.
I think a 21-year-old is leading it, and the race favorite just stalled his engine on pit road. So, you know, it's a good day here. Good day to discuss the impending doom of the Columbus Blue Jackets franchise. So let's get into it, guys.
You know what? It's also a good segue because you mentioned the pit stall. That's a doom day for him as well, for that driver. So bad day for him. Good day for us, considering the Blue Jackets' impending doom. So, yeah, so Saturday night, tweets came out. It was mentioned that basically Seth Jones pretty much admitted what I already figured. He's not going to extend right now, at least. He's looking to test UFA free agency next summer. I mean, that couldn't be more obvious, I thought. But basically, that means they don't want to go down Artemi Panarin 2.0. They don't want to go into the season, or at least they don't want to keep him throughout the season and then lose him for nothing. You got to get something for him. In all likelihood, he's traded maybe as soon as this offseason. Who knows? But you would assume that he's going to be gone. Maybe he comes back next summer or whatever. Who knows? But anyway, I'll start with you, Seeds. So, Blue Jackets, probably trading Seth Jones. That's probably, would you do it right now, or would you wait until the season starts and see if a team overpays?
First of all, I'd do it as soon as possible to get the maximum value on return. But I just want to kind of go back to, for the longest time, ever since Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky left the Blue Jackets, I have been mentally steeling myself for Seth Jones to leave. You know, it's not that this team hasn't competed on a nightly basis without those two players. It's not that. It's that there is a distinct lack of high-end talent on this roster that prevents them from competing at the highest level of the sport. When you look at how teams like the Colorado Avalanche, the Vegas Golden Knights, the Carolina Hurricanes, the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Boston Bruins, teams that when you think of cup favorites, cup contenders, look at how their rosters are built and then compare them to what the Columbus Blue Jackets have. They have a nice player in Oliver Bjorkstrand. They have an aging Cam Atkinson. Zach Werenski is pretty talented, arguably is better than Seth Jones. And then they've got question marks in net because they don't really want to, they haven't decided who they want to commit to, if any of these goaltenders. So when you look at it from Seth Jones's perspective, he is coming up on free agency with a team that he was not drafted by, with a team that he was traded to in the early stages of his career. And when he looks at the makeup of this roster, the distinct lack of centers, the utter lack of compete on this roster over this past season, I understand why he does not want to commit to this roster long term. I can't honestly fault him for it because he's earned the right in free agency to decide where he wants to go if that is where he so chooses, or if that is what he so chooses to do. It is yet another slap in the face of this organization that a highly skilled player comes here and does not want to commit. It continues. I understand it from Seth's perspective. It sucks as a fan of this organization to see a yet another name player who's been an all-star want out of here. And it just continues to blow my mind that this organization can burn through so many talented players and just one after the other walk out the door and not change fundamentally how they operate, how they market the team, how they market the players. They keep running things back and expecting it to be different. Either it'll be different with Panarin, it'll be different with Seth Jones, it'll be different with Zach Werenski. We haven't seen any. It's just one continuous thing after another where you just, like I said, I've been steeling myself for years that this was going to happen. And last night it was still a kick in the balls. Like, this just sucks.
Yeah, I was pretty depressed last night about this news. I think a lot of us knew that this was certainly a possibility. The coaching change, the uncertainty around what's going to happen with the organization this summer. I've kind of been on the side of things recently that kind of Seas was talking about, that the talent is not on this roster to compete for a cup. Their best chance was to end up like a Carolina. You know, maybe you can grab a couple middle centers from somewhere, middle six centers from somewhere, and hope that guys like Foodie and Chinakov and Chinakov, however you say his last name. I'm going to learn that eventually, by the way.
I think it's Chinakov.
Guys kick it off. You know, we have a good defense. We have Elvis Merzlikins, and we can pull off some sort of Carolina kind of a team play. You roll 4 second lines and compete, you know, in a division. We'll kind of see what happens to Carolina in the playoffs and see kind of how far they can push it. But, you know, the talent isn't on this roster, and I don't know how you don't go full rebuild at this point. I don't see how you keep Zach Werenski. In my mind, there's just no way he stays. And why would he? Why does he want to spend his prime years playing for a bad team?
Exactly.
For all that we know, he wants to go to Detroit, right? A team that might be good here in a couple years.
Play with his best friend.
Right now, exactly. Right now, you're going to get the best return you can get for Zach Werenski. His return's not going to be better than it is going to be this summer. Same for a guy like Patrick Laine. People might think that his value is down, but I don't buy that. Somebody's going to want him. Somebody's going to pay for him, given what he brings for a team, especially a team that maybe is on the verge of, they've got some play drivers. They just need some support. And at this point too, I hate to say this, but you know, do you go ahead and trade Elvis too at this point? You don't need him if you're not going to be any good. So to me, it just kind of blows up the whole scenario of this team. It's worst case scenario for what you're looking to do. And I just don't see how you can reload like Jarmo was putting it to me. You know, you even maybe start shopping a guy like Atkinson too. And just kind of seeing what kind of return you can get for him. But I don't know how this doesn't trigger a fire sale, for lack of better words.
Oh yeah. I mean, like you said, I mean, Zach Werenski, same situation. It's like, you better get ahead of this now. You better just basically commit all in one way or the other, whether it's basically blow it up and get max value. And you guys both talked about this team doesn't have the talent to really be a legitimate contender. This is the opportunity potentially this summer to say, you know what do you want? Give us give us your best offers on all these guys and hope that these guys, either whether it's prospects, draft picks, you hope that they turn into something, because we've been through this bubble thing, this bubble playoff team for the last several years. Outside, even when their best shot was going for it at the deadline and they had Duchesne and Panarin, that was still an 8 seed that somehow got through Tampa. It was on a magic carpet ride. It's not like they were a 1 or a 2 or a 3 seed. They were, I mean, yeah, they did have that high seeding years ago, and then they lost to Pittsburgh in the first round. But yeah, this team, they need to build it. I'm not gonna say build it differently, but like they have to maximize what they have for the long term future at this point. I know PD, I know we've talked about how, you know, you didn't want to flip a guy like Werenski and all that, but at this point, you got to maximize the return value. You guys, you know, whether it's Elvis, Cam is the one guy that has years on his contract. That's, if they were able to move him, I mean, some teams got to kind of want that. All these other guys are either unsigned or have a year left. So
I think you absolutely have to go into, if you are trading Seth Jones, you absolutely at a minimum have to listen to offers for Zach Werenski, for Elvis Merzlikins, and Patrick Laine. Obviously, at some point, you still have to ice a roster of some sort of players, so maybe you hang on to like a Max Domi or whoever for a year, but this is a roster that it, this is, like, as you said, Dale, this is worst case scenario. This is an absolute 5-alarm fire for this organization, and I think it should, and I hope it does trigger hard conversations in the front office of what are we as an organization, where are we going, and what do we want to be as a franchise? Because you have to find, like, we've had a lot of fun times with this team being a bubble playoff, being a bubble team, getting into the postseason, winning a few games. But at some point, like, this team has, you know, for all the grand success that this team has had the last few years, they've won a total of 11 playoff games since John Tortorella got hired. Like, that's not good enough. Like, it is good relative to what this organization was for its first decade. But if you look around at the rest of the NHL, that is not good enough. This organization needs to start being held to a higher standard. I think this needs to light a fire under Yarmo's seat, because I have, like, where, I don't understand how you can go from this is a reload, to all of a sudden he's getting extended and now it's a rebuild. I have a lot of questions about Jarmo Kekäläinen's continued employment here and what he's going to do with this roster going forward. And part of me wonders if that's why they brought JD back, is to be a babysitter and be a higher up to kind of oversee some of Yarmo's decisions. But this is absolutely, I think, a worst case scenario.
Yeah, I definitely think JD is the right guy.
Yeah, I think this is absolutely a worst case scenario here. Like, right, JD kind of built the Blues. He was working with Steve Gorton to build the New York Rangers before the Dolans.
You mean Jeff Gorton, right?
I think that there is Jeff Gorton. Yeah,
Just Think Racer.
Steve Gorton used to be a reporter who covered the team.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right.
But regardless, there are so many. We know that Jones is not going to sign here, which means he's probably getting traded. So now we can start progressing, moving forward, and asking tough questions about what this organization is, who needs to be held accountable, and what does this organization want to be. We have heard numerous stories throughout the end of this year and into the summer of how the players have issues with how this team markets itself and markets its players. They don't do it. Something needs to change on that end. I was thinking last night of how at some point I want to write an article of what lessons this team can take from its new neighbors down the road, the Columbus Crew. And it's like, you need to listen to fans. You need to, and you know, make your fans a part of the process and like actually listen to what the fans on the ground are saying. You need to find a way to actually market your players. You need to find a way to build goodwill and actually commit to bringing in players who want to win and are like going to advance the cause of actually winning, not just nice guys who are good in the community, who are Boone Jenner and Cam Atkinson are nice guys, but they're not, you know, the guys who are going to lead you to a Stanley Cup. They're not the kind of guys you commit to and, you know, tout as this leadership group that are untouchable and this unmovable core. There are hard lessons that this organization needs to take and move forward from, because again, I just don't think 11 playoff wins in the last decade is good enough. It's just not good enough. Nothing this organization has done is good enough, and that is why at the end of the day, you see guys like Jones and Panarin leave.
I wasn't a fan of going for it back in, what year was that, 2018?
My friend Carl would agree with you.
2018. Yeah, it was fun. I think we as fans, we love sweeping the Lightning. I think we had Boston on the ropes. And if we get past Boston or take that to a game seven, who knows what happens? You know, that team very well could have ended up in the finals. I don't think that the moves that were made and the sacrifices that were made were worth it. You know, you think about where this organization could potentially be at if they had traded Panarin the summer before, if they had traded Bobrovsky the summer before. You know, this was a team going into this summer that doesn't have a prospect pool. We've got some guys playing over in Europe. We've got some guys playing in the KHL. We have almost no North American prospects, almost none. And
yeah,
what did the future of this organization look like? You know, if they had a deep prospect pool, you know, maybe you could have justified continuing to be mediocre. But when everything is barren, like it is, you got players leaving, you've got to do something. But to kind of go back to what Seeds was saying, There's some sort of systemic issue with this organization, whether it is coming from the front office on the hockey side, or maybe it's coming from the Mike Priest side. From all reports and what's been written and what's been said, it doesn't sound like John McConnell is too involved with the team. He's got a pretty hands-off approach with how the team is run. So it points somewhere else. The problem is Mike Priest. The problem is maybe it's the board in general. Maybe it is Jarmo Kekalainen. But you don't market players. You don't. There doesn't seem to be a push to win a Stanley Cup. And other people have said this. I think a lot of the commenters on the blog have said this, that this team seems to be okay with mediocrity and just trying its best to break even or make money. There's been some financial issues with this organization. So it brings up a lot of questions. Why are players leaving? It's got to be figured out. It's got to be changed, or it's only going to get worse.
Right.
Yeah.
Right now, this organization, you bring up the financial aspect, and I can't help but wonder, like, is it that there isn't a push? Like you said, you mentioned McConnell not being involved per reports, and I do wonder if he at the top, very top, is okay with a bubble team that gets a couple extra home playoff dates, which is money in his pocket to turn some sort of profit, and then they're okay with that, and that sentiment filters down through the rest of the organization. You know, you make moves in service of just hanging around and maybe getting those extra home playoff dates in a league where more than half of the teams currently make the playoffs. And if that's the case, then what are you trying to be as an organization? What are you really aspiring to from a competitive standpoint? If that is indeed the case, and while we certainly don't and likely won't ever have proof of that, it's hard to deny that is at least, from the outside looking in, that appearance is there. And that, to me, leads to hard decisions about what do you want to be as an organization going forward, and is this organization sustainable in this market going forward? Because eventually, if you don't make any real push to win, do anything successful on a long-term basis, you keep having star players leave, eventually fans are going to stop showing up and players are going to continue to leave, at which point when fans stop showing up and you are icing a bare minimum program, that's when relocation rumors start. And that is not a good place for an organization to be.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Hello, I'm Neelai Patel, the editor-in-chief of The Verge and host of Decoder, a business podcast where I interview CEOs about big ideas, the problems that come from those ideas, and how they make decisions. It is also surprisingly about org charts. It comes up a lot. We're launching a new limited series that we're calling the Centennial Series, where I talk to CEOs of companies that are over 100 years old, like Xerox, Barnes & Noble, and more. There's no 100-year-old company that's without its struggles, and it's been fascinating to talk to these CEOs about which parts of these companies' history are important and which parts they can let go. A little spoiler for you, if a company is over 100 years old, there's a lot of drama to talk about. It's been a good time. You can listen to the Centennial Series right in the Decoder feed. New episodes of Decoder are out on Tuesday, and the Centennial Series is out on Thursdays. Check it out. We think you're really going to like it. You can get it wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I just hope, in the sense that I get with this team, this organization, is that right now they just not want to be cheap, but that they're going the cheap route, whether that's the next head coach, not keeping players, whatever the case may be. I get from maybe the COVID aspect, there's some of that, but other teams are still trying to win. And basically, yeah, that's not going to go over well if you just go the cheap route. You just decide, well, we're not going to hire a guy like Gerard Gallant because,
you can kiss Gallant coming to Columbus goodbye.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening anyways.
I don't think they have the dollars to do it. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's why Brad Larson's getting an interview. It's because he would be a exactly. cheap option. I'm not kidding.
That's the reality. That's what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid that they're going to go that option just because it'd be cheap. And that's not going to work. This fan base will revolt. I mean, I'm sure he's a great guy, but forget that. We're just talking on the ice. He hasn't gotten it done in his role. Maybe he does run the practices. Maybe he is. Maybe there's intangibles about him, but there's nothing about him that we've seen that brings to mind why he should be the head coach. And if it's just because he's cheap, well, this team is just going to be what they've been for the next however many years.
Can I just say something real quick? I'm reading.
Please.
Portsline has an article on The Athletic right now about change of plans. Blue Jackets likely to trade Seth Jones without contract extension. Obviously, no one in the organization is going on the record and saying, yeah, we're going to trade Seth Jones, but apparently sources have told The Athletic the Jackets are likely to trade Jones this summer, most likely near the NHL draft in late July. John Davidson goes on to say, we want players who want to be in Columbus, who want to be Blue Jackets, and we're going to continue to create that culture. And I am so
That's the Armo thing from a couple of years ago.
I am so freaking sick of hearing, we want players who want to be in Columbus. You know what keeps players in Columbus? Winning, going for Stanley Cups, paying star players, not overpaying good in the locker room guys, not overpaying, you know, your run-of-the-mill 35-point winger who is middle six replaceable at best. Drafting well, maintaining status quo, not burning bridges and wielding the hammer in negotiations with RFAs and burning bridges so guys demand out of here, and actually paying players fair market value when they deserve it and demand it, actually can, you know, maybe you didn't want to give Josh Anderson 8 years, but you know what? Extending him an offer worth that might have been a gesture of goodwill to see that, you know, this organization actually cares about keeping a talented player whose skill set is hard to find and replace in today's NHL might actually look good around the league. It's just so infuriating that we want good family men who want to be in a nice little family town. It's just nice dudes don't win Stanley Cups. I hate that I'm even saying this, but Tom Wilson has a Stanley Cup ring for a reason. Everyone can whine and complain about how they think the Lightning take cheap shots and Nikita Kucherov is this dirty player who flops and, you know, takes liberties with guys, but you know what? guys, the guy puts the puck in the net and wins Stanley Cups. And we have a lot of guys who don't do anything to even protect their goaltender when their goaltender is getting mauled in the crease. They just freaking stand there, and then they don't, and then they wonder why they don't win. Like, guys don't back each other up, and then they don't win a damn thing. And it's just so frustrating. I want to see a team play with a little bit of edge and a little bit of physicality and actually compete and stick the hell up for one another and maybe actually put some pucks in the net occasionally.
Foligno did that, and then he did it in Toronto. Even though we all kind of were like, why are you fighting? He still brings that edge. But yeah, remember last playoffs against Tampa? How many times was Corpy basically, you know, getting whether it was, I think it was Yanni Gord of the Lightning, players in his face. There was no like pushback. There wasn't any.
And that's just so emblematic of this organization. They get punched in the mouth and they don't push back. This organization has just for the last 2-3 years has just rolled over and died on the vine and just kind of, it's just so infuriating from a top down, from the very top of the front office down, every major decision or pushback, they have just rolled over and died on the vine. And I'm infuriated with watching it.
I was really confused by the Yarmo extension, to be honest with you. He got a 4-year extension. I think that he's now signed through 2025, the end of the 24-25 season now, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
I can't point to a thing that Jarmo Kekalainen has done to make this team closer to a Stanley Cup contender ever since he signed or traded for Artemi Panarin. Since he signed for Artemi Panarin, this team has only gotten worse. They haven't gotten better. They would not have been a playoff team last year if the season hadn't ended. I think, you know, people kind of fail to point that out, but I think it's an important thing to point out. If the season had not stopped last year because of COVID, the Blue Jackets would not have made the playoffs, most likely. I think, what were all the statistics? I think it was like a 15% chance or somewhere around there when the season paused.
Yeah, it was and don't forget, they had just lost Seth Jones and Oliver Bjorkstrand to injuries for at least the rest of the regular season.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got to point to some issues of, you know, bringing Tortorella back, you know, which shouldn't have been done. Some other moves that were made, missing out on prospects, trading, you know, the Josh Anderson fiasco. I don't see why Jarmo warranted a 4-year extension when this team has only gotten worse over the past 3 or 4 seasons. And where do we go from here? What from the front office is going to change to make us feel like we're headed in the right direction? Now, don't get me wrong. I think there's some potential moves this summer that could be made that might surprise us. But I'm in a wait and see mode with Jarmo. I don't know where this organization is headed. And frankly, I didn't get the extension.
Yeah, I feel like the last 2 years after the Davidson hire, I think that was just a sweetener to be like, hey, we're going to give you 2 more years. I don't really know beyond that. But yeah. I agree. I don't know what the direction is other than rebuild at this point, because that's just the most obvious thing. And that's just starting all over again. You know, going back to the brick by brick thing that JD said years ago when he first came to Columbus, that's kind of where they're at now, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't have any bricks left that they acquired. They spent all this time in capital after JD was hired. You know, they brought in Seth Jones after Ryan Johansson left under circumstances that are, you know, we don't need to rehash. They brought it, you know, that was a major piece. They luckily won that draft lottery and moved up to third place and picked Pierre-Luc Dubois, who now begged out of town, and they acquired Patrick Laine, but that looked like an absolute bust this past season. He looked god awful and admitted his confidence was just non-existent. Max Domi was, they traded Josh Anderson, a player with size and speed who was an absolute force in that and made himself noticed all over the ice in that Game 6 Montreal victory over the Toronto Maple Leafs. And they brought in Max Domi, who utterly disappointed this season. It's just one thing after all these bricks that they acquired are gone, and now we're just, with the exception of basically Zach Werenski, who might do be in this exact same position next summer. It's just, like you said, Dale, there is no real... I don't understand the Yarmo extension. I don't understand what he did to warrant it. Maybe they just gave him that as a sweetener, like Will said, as a, you know, we're bringing in someone to take over your role as president of hockey operations and take that seat on the governor's board away from you. So here's an extension to make that a little more palatable. But I don't understand what Yarmo did to warrant that. I don't think most of the decisions he has made have worked out. I think his... I get that he has... I'm not an NHL scout. I'm not an NHL general manager. I don't have decisions in making draft picks. But, like, even his drafting has been questionable. We're drafting guys that aren't coming over. You know, wouldn't it have been nice if we had, you know, drafted a couple guys who were prospects that could have come over or could have been brought up to the team in the last year or two rather than, you know, being stowed away in Russia until 24, 25 or whenever? But it's not one major thing other than players leaving, but it's a bunch of scenarios just stacked on top of each other that just paint a picture of a very sick organization. And I don't know how to fix it. I don't know what this team needs to do.
You said Werenski, you know, he's going to be an RFA next summer. I wonder what that's going to be like, because if he's still in Columbus, because they play hardball with RFAs, and this guy, you know, whether or not he probably wouldn't sign a long-term deal, but are they going to make it so that he wants out after his next deal if he's still in Columbus at that point?
I mean, he'll be an RFA with arbitration rights, so theoretically he could just sign a one-year qualifying offer and
yeah,
walk for nothing.
That's exactly
that's probably what he would do.
Entirely what I expect him to do. If he doesn't refuse to show up to camp and demands a trade, I fully expect him to sign a 1-year qualifying offer and walk, because I couldn't blame him for not wanting to stay here. If he's seeing all these other players leave, you know, Domi will be in UFA. Patrick Laine will be in the exact same position if he's still around. He'll be an RFA with arbitration rights. Like, it's this is the worst case scenario, and it could still and likely will get darker. Like, that's the reality of where this organization is right now.
So let's talk about where does Yarmo go from here? And I might still trying to decide what I'm going to write about this week, but it might go in this direction. You know, I think the worst thing that you could do here, not the worst, but, you know, if you turn around and you sell Jones for draft picks, you're selling him for lottery tickets. And that could end up being very bad. You know, I think
like you, Darvish.
Yeah, I think there are some scenarios out there. You know, it's hard when you're talking about a guy that's only got 1 year left who said he wants to test free agency. So you're talking about the best case scenario there is probably trading him to a team that maybe thinks has a shot at extending him. You know, Colorado comes to mind. Dallas comes to mind. You know, if you can get one of these teams to bite on Jones, the reason Colorado comes to my mind is, you know, maybe you can pry Alex Newhook out of their hands for Seth Jones.
For similar reasons, I was thinking L.A. for Byfield.
Yeah, I think L.A. is a target for Laine. You know, there's rumors going around that Eichel could potentially be headed to L.A. You know, if L.A. can pick up Eichel and Laine, what does that look like? That speeds up their rebuild, you know, quite a bit. But I think that if you're talking about selling these guys, I think Yarmo's first target has got to be these teams with prospects that are close to being NHL ready, or maybe are NHL ready next year, that are going to take a couple years to develop within the NHL. You know, you've got Cousins in Buffalo, you've got Newhook in Colorado, and then you've got a couple centers in LA and Anaheim. But trading these guys for lottery picks is potentially disastrous for this organization. So we'll see what happens. But if we can pick up a couple of those prospects, if we can land a top five pick in this draft, who knows? But I think the good news is that, you know, we might be in the Shane Wright lottery for next year.
I don't know much about Shane Wright. Can you enlighten me real quick?
Shane Wright, he's touted as the next generational player. He's a center. He's blown up pretty much anywhere he's been. So he's considered the overall number one next year, and it's not close. I don't know, like, comparison wise, you know, if you're talking about a Crosby or a McDavid, I don't think he's that high. I could be wrong, but he's very highly touted, and then they're saying he's probably the best prospect since maybe Matthews.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I'm just pulling up his Elite Prospects page. Just looking at Shane Wright, it looks like in 1920 he had 66 points in 58 games for the Kingston Frontenacs in the OHL. So that'd be nice. You know, it'd be nice to have someone who can score. It'd be nice to have a center in the pipeline. But I agree, Dale. They cannot trade Jones or Line A for picks. Like picks cannot be the centerpiece of a return for one of these players. That is absolutely disastrous, because if you're trading a guy like Jones or Line A to a team on the cusp, likely this is the kind of player that puts them out of the lottery and into the playoffs and into some sort of contention. And that knocks you out of the lottery and knocks the value of these draft picks way down, where you're likely not, where you're mm-hmm. likely picking a 2 to 3 year project. You have to get something tangible in return. And that's, like you said, that's why you're targeting one of these teams that has prospects on the rise who could be NHL ready either this year or next. Because let's be real, this is going to be a bad team next year. Columbus Blue Jackets are going to be bad. So if you can get players who are a year or two away, who can develop, you can get into your system under whatever coach you hire for on the cheap and develop them into whatever you want this organization's style to be and start getting them NHL ready that way, then potentially in a couple of years, when you have, you know, Marchenko coming over and Voronkov coming over, maybe then you're starting to get back into, then now we're a bubble team and we're on the rise again. But you have to get something tangible back.
Seeds, that's another thing to think about too, is Marchenko and Voronkov. You're going to have to be able to prove to them that it's worth it for them to come over. You know, are they going to want to come over for a bad team? Do they stay in the KHL until they hit free agency? You know, so, I mean, there's other aspects too. I mean, this is like we talked about before, this is worst case scenario, because there's a lot of downstream effects of this kind of thing happening.
Right. This is a slippery slope here that we're about to start falling down.
And people want to criticize Seth Jones for not committing long term. I mean, obviously, why would anybody commit? Yeah, I get it. You could be the one guy that says, you know what? I believe in this. What's there to believe in, though? Even if his peak was watching his team get in as a bubble seed every year. And then going forward, we're talking about a 26, 27-year-old guy who's in the prime of his career today. He doesn't want to commit to a rebuild. Why would anybody do that? And then that's why I love these people who are like, oh, well, this guy, he doesn't want to commit, so he needs to be out. Yeah, I agree. He needs to be out because you have to get something for him, but I don't blame him.
Please, any fan listening to this, do not tweet at Seth Jones or his family for this decision, because that is absolutely disgraceful. It's the same as tweeting at recruits. Seth Jones has earned the right as an unrestricted free agent to determine where he wants to go and what he wants to do with his future. If that is not in Columbus, that is his decision and his right, and you people do not have the right to verbally harass him on Twitter. That is absolutely obnoxious, and you need to not do that.
Agreed. This is going to already be decided by Tuesday, obviously, today, when people are listening, but I want to say go Montreal because I want to see Toronto blow up. But at the same time, I kind of wanted Foligno to win. I don't know. That whole thing is crazy. And then Vegas, Colorado. I got Colorado. But what do you guys think about all these other games and series?
Colorado. They're the favorite for a reason. They're incredible to watch. Could Vegas upset them? Absolutely. I don't see how Colorado doesn't make it to the finals. They're that good.
I mean, Colorado had like 60% expected goals against every team they played this year. That is absurd. If you have tuned out of the playoffs or haven't watched much of the West, I invite you, please watch the Vegas-Colorado series, because this is going to be possibly the best series of the entire playoffs. Like, these two teams tied in points for the Stanley Cup or for the President's Trophy, and Colorado won it on the regulation wins tiebreaker. These two teams are heavyweights. The Colorado Avalanche are dynamic at every position. I have them winning this series in 7 games, but I think Colorado wins it and wins the Stanley Cup, because this team is absolutely terrifying, and they're And they're going to play Vegas with their second line center suspended for this entire series. Nazem Kadri's out after demolishing one of the Blues. I forget who with an illegal check to the head. But I think that this Colorado team is deep. They can score. They can beat you at 5-on-5. Their power play, like they can put out a power play of Rantanen, Landeskog, McKinnon, McCarr, and like pick a fifth player like JT Compher, Brandon Saad, Alex Newhook, whoever you want to throw on that line. It's Sam Girard. It's so wild what the Colorado Avalanche have built out there, and they're coached by former Monsters coach Jared Bednar. They are a blast to watch. I highly recommend watching them.
Yeah, Will, go Montreal. All apologies to Nick Foligno, but it's always fun to watch Toronto lose.
Yeah.
And I don't think Nick Foligno is enough exactly to sway me on that aspect.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I guess I'm rooting for Montreal. I'm not rooting for Toronto. I never usually root for Toronto. I was kind of rooting for Foligno, but yeah, I kind of want to see Toronto just go nuclear on Twitter. They already are, but I don't even care if they do win Game 7. They're not going to win the Cup. Toronto, something's not right there, or they don't have enough of something, but they're not going to do it.
No, I was kind of on the fence of who I wanted to win this series, especially after the Tavares injury. Like, you know, yeah, win one for Tavares and get him back. But watching Game 6 as the Canadiens blew that lead and then ended up winning the game in overtime and forcing Game 7, I was like, oh man, I actually want Montreal to pull this out. Like, I want to see what, because like the Columbus Blue Jackets are going to have a lot of questions to answer this summer, because they are losing a lot of talent. They have talent that wants out. Toronto is a very talented team up front with mediocre defense and bad goaltending, and they are going to be forced to ask a lot of questions and potentially blow it up this summer as a result if they lose to the Montreal Canadiens. Obviously, by now, those of you who are listening to this know the result of that, but I will be endlessly fascinated by what happens to that organization and to those fans whenever that team loses. Right now, if you guys like have looked at the discourse, or like I highly recommend go look at the comments on James Myrtle's article on The Athletic, because they are about ready to drive to Mitch Marner's house and pack his stuff and drive him out of town for him. Like, they are ready to send Marner out of town. Auston Matthews hasn't really done much in this series. These fans are outrageous. Like, yeah, I was gonna say, I'm endlessly fascinated by the discourse around the Maple Leafs and how they were gifted a path out of the Northern Division this year and are squandering it so badly. This is endlessly fascinating to me.
I was going to bring up Matthews because I've seen how people are not happy with him and all that, but then it's like, oh, he's still signed for another few more years. But I would take Auston Matthews right now, 40 goals or whatever a season. Columbus needs goal scoring, and I get it. He's not maybe performing in the playoffs, but I'll still take an Auston Matthews right now.
You know, you talk about Toronto's seeds. You got to wonder if Toronto could be a potential Werenski destination if they were willing to make that big of a move. He's got 2 years, maybe for a guy like Marner. But, you know, what about Edmonton? You know, Edmonton loses. They've got two
Connor
of the best
McDavid
players in the world. Again, a team that's just not that good defensively. They're questionable in net. Their GM comes out and basically says, you know, we don't think we need to make any major moves to make this team better. But, you know, who knows what happens out of Edmonton. So you'd have two of these Canadian teams just potentially in turmoil going into the offseason.
I like the idea of Connor McDavid is what you're saying, Dale. I know it. Or Leon Draisaitl. I'll take right, it or whatever.
As a consolation prize, we can trade Jonas Korpisalo to Edmonton for Leon Draisaitl.
There you go.
We'll be generous. We can be generous and throw in a third round pick.
There you go.
I get the offense might fall off a little bit without McDavid, but he's still great.
Oh, yeah. A guy that puts up points like McDavid, you don't turn around and tell that guy to play defense.
Yeah.
Is that average 2 points a game nearly?
Can we crop that little segment out and send that to the Edmonton media? Because I think they need to hear that. It's the playoffs have been endlessly fascinating this year. Like, Minnesota pushed Vegas to game seven, despite Marc-Andre Fleury, I don't know, channeling prime Dominic Hasek. Like, the Avalanche look like world beaters. Carolina-Tampa, we haven't even touched on that. That's going to be an incredible series here.
Winnipeg, they swept Edmonton.
Winnipeg swept Edmonton and are just waiting and are lying in wait with potentially, like, Winnipeg. Winnipeg has one of the two best goaltenders left in the playoffs right now, I think, with Connor Hellebuyck. Like, and so, and a good goaltender can get you anywhere in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Like, we have seen that time and again. A good goaltender, a hot goaltender, can steal you games, and then all you need is a couple bounces and you're there.
If Toronto gets past Montreal, you got to wonder, it's going to be close, but you got to wonder if the Jets are the favorite in that series.
Yeah. Connor Hellebuyck, I mean, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. It wouldn't surprise me if he got hot, went on a run. He's a Vezina winning goaltender, and it looks like he's hot right now. And yeah, I think they would beat Montreal and maybe even Toronto.
Right. We did a playoff bracket on NHL.com for our dog, and our dog's bracket is 170,000 spots better than mine on NHL.com, because it turns out picking Edmonton to go to the Final Four was a bad decision on my part, and the dog has Winnipeg winning the Stanley Cup, so she's looking high and mighty, and I am very much not.
How did she make her picks?
So what we did is we put a treat in each hand. Each hand represented a team. Like, you know, like, oh, this one, pick this one for Edmonton, pick this one for Winnipeg. And then she just kind of picked whichever one she pawed at. That was her pick. And then she got the treat. And she has a Final Four of Boston, Carolina, Winnipeg, and Colorado. So, like,
did she pick the Islanders?
I do not remember who she picked, but I'm losing to my dog. Like, the playoffs have been bonkers, and it's been fun to watch them as a neutral, and it's been a nice distraction from all of the drama around the Columbus Blue Jackets. Like, it's nice to watch high octane hockey and just enjoy it as a spectator without having to worry about all of the surrounding drama. And I thought we were going to get a nice Saturday night free, and then Elliot Friedman decided to blow it up and ruin all of our Saturday nights. So shout out to you, Friedge, for ruining a Saturday night on a holiday weekend.
I was just like, all right, well, yeah, duh. When I saw it, I was like, of course, duh. But Riley will be on the podcast next week in place of Seeds, because Riley knows what's up.
Yeah, we're just gonna have Riley guest spot for me, because she clearly understands hockey better than I do. The NHL draft lottery is Wednesday night, so
oh, yes.
We could somehow, Seth Jones pushed out the biggest news of the week that we might end up winning Seth Jones's replacement on Wednesday night.
Number one draft pick.
Yeah, we could win Jones's replacement Wednesday night. Yeah,
I think Powers is a left-handed defenseman, and I think the next guy is maybe Hughes. Possibly, I could be making that up.
Yeah,
he's a right-handed defenseman. So, right there, you have either your Jones or Werenski replacement.
There you go.
I'm not holding my breath, but man, wouldn't that be a nice consolation prize for all the crap we're going through?
You know, maybe the NHL could like throw us a bone. They rigged this thing to give it to Pittsburgh when Pittsburgh was down in the dumps. Maybe they can throw us a bone, considering all of our players are leaving, and give us a player worth keeping around.
I think we've hit the end of this week's episode. As all, I don't know, every single week now, I'm like, there's probably going to be more stuff, and there probably will. I never know how to close these things, but there's probably going to be more bombshells or something. Well, at least we'll be talking playoffs at the very least next week, and who knows, other nuggets that come out. So anyways, that is all. Check us out at CBJ Cannon on Twitter and Facebook. At jacketscannon.com, player reviews. Dale, you said you had an article coming out this week on something, so stay tuned for that, and we'll see you all next week. Subscribe to the Cannon Cast on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you can catch every episode. Leave us a review and a rating, and as always, we welcome your thoughts and feedback. Go to jacketscannon.com for more Blue Jackets coverage from us, and follow us on Twitter at CBJCannon. Our theme music is the song Green Eyes by Angela Pearlie and the Howlin' Moons. Check out angelapearlie.com for more music and show dates.